everyone. This is Joe Cristiano, and welcome to Liberty Talk Radio, your independent streaming internet radio station and libertarian voice, broadcasting 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, from our studio in Tulsa, Oklahoma, to around the world. This broadcast is being brought to you live on Sunday, February 25th, 2007. Folks, this station is your antidote to popular talk radio, where you are expected to do more than just listen. You are expected to think. Although we broadcast from the United States, libertarian principles of individual freedom and responsibility are universal and apply to your area of residence, be it New York, Bangkok, Rio de Janeiro, Berlin, or Stalingrad. It's time for us to take back control of our government now, before this bureaucratic, oversized, and self-serving federal government starves us of our liberty, our freedom, our property, and our rights. To do this, we must shed conventional thinking regarding our political structure. We need to be revolutionaries in thought, dissidents in action. Only after we recognize what our government is doing to our freedom and our Constitution will we start taking it back. And this program is just about that. Good evening, everyone. This is Joe Cristiano. This is Liberty Talk Radio. And this evening, we should have calling in Mr. Daniel Imperato. He is an international businessman, successful businessman, I should say, and he is now running for the office of President of the United States. He's out of Florida, and we're going to interview him to see what his thoughts are on how to run the country. So we will be waiting for a moment until he calls in. I don't see his phone lighting up yet. Next Thursday, we will be broadcasting, as usual, starting at 6:30 a.m. Thursday morning, and we will conclude our discussion of government schools, as well as a little introspection as to where America is and where it may be heading. We also will have someone else from the state of Florida speaking to us next Sunday evening. Stay tuned and watch our blog, and you'll get all the details. I asked Mr. Imperato to call about 9:32 his time, which is 8:32 our time. I don't have our phone lines are open, but I guess our clocks are not totally synchronized, and he should be calling in any moment. In fact, let me give you a little rundown of Mr. Imperato. He is from Florida, and he's been in telecommunications. He's been involved in the construction of entertainment facilities and sports arenas. He's also counseled with Fortune 500 companies. He has a perspective on how we should proceed. I don't think he's a libertarian, by the way. He's running as an independent. And some of the issues we shall discuss this evening, we will try to determine where he stands and why he does so. Okay, he is a little late in calling in. Our phone lines are open. Mr. Imperato, where are you? Okay, let me read to you from his website regarding the economy. He says he wishes to reduce the federal debt and deficits. He says we must enact policies and measures that spend less, save more, export more, import less, balance our budget, and address the growing mountain of unfunded liabilities. And I guess the unfunded liabilities is the big job. Here he is. You're on the air.
Hi, Chris. How are you?
Fine. Your name, please.
Daniel Imperato speaking.
Okay, Mr. Imperato. Thank you very much for calling in. Are you speaking, calling from a regular phone?
Yes, I am.
Okay. If you can speak directly into the phone and give us a little bit more volume, that would be helpful.
I'm doing the best I can. Let me see if I can raise it a little bit for you. How's that, Chris?
That's much better. Thank you very much. And I want to thank you very much for being on our program this evening. I know Sunday evening, especially where you are, it's 9:34, I guess, p.m., is not the most convenient time. That's the time that I like to wind down, but I find it's the most convenient time to get people to call in sometimes. So I want to thank you very much for calling in. And I already introduced you to our audience. You are running for the President of the United States as an independent. I told him you were from Florida. So as an opening statement, why don't you tell our audience a little bit about yourself, who you are, where you're from, where you're coming from, and then after that, we want to speak to you about why you are running for office, okay? So I'll give you a couple of minutes on that.
Okay, well, first of all, I'm from Boston, Massachusetts, and born and brought up there. I came down to Florida somewhere around age 18. I've been traveling the world extensively for 30 years. I've been involved in all kinds of businesses. My desire in life as a young man was to become a millionaire, see the world, and get an education, and by golly gee, I've done it all. Because of my ability to be able to achieve my goals in life and work diligently traveling the globe, I have an overwhelming amount of a wealth of knowledge, intuition, wisdom, and I feel that I owe it to the American public to utilize my wisdom and hopefully bridge a gap that's growing between the Middle East and the United States, and specifically the Muslim community and the Christian community, and also spent a hell of a lot of time in South America, and I feel there's a big gap there.
Okay. If you had to categorize your campaign, what issue was the most moving issue for you that motivated you to run for office?
Well, I have to say that I spent quite some time over in Rome. I'm a papal knight. I have honors from the Vatican. I'm a papal knight. I'm also a knight of Malta. And I'm also a knight of Bonaria, which is a humanitarian organization. And after the passing of our late Pope John Paul, I was visiting the Vatican in Rome during the inauguration of Benedict XVI. And I had this feeling come over me that I'm supposed to do what I'm doing and I'm on a mission. So I've decided to give back to society and hopefully create a better world and do the best I can to convince the American people that it's time for change. And I believe that I have the ability to do so. I believe I have the ability to run this country. And it's a mission that's been placed on my heart from the powers to be upstairs. So I'm going on my mission, and we'll see where it ends up.
Okay. Well, I admire you for that. You know that this is not going to be an easy journey for yourself.
Well, life's not an easy journey, but life's, you know, what you make of it. And I've been through a lot of ups and downs in my life all over the globe and different races, faces, colors, shapes, sizes, languages. And guess what? It's all the same to me. It's a walk in the park. The biggest challenge of this path here is getting on the ballots. The Democrats and the Republicans and our government have structured a situation that is almost impossible for a candidate, an independent candidate, to get on the ballots, and that's why I'm supporting the populist vote. I hope that that expands throughout the United States. And the fact is this has been a two-family government. It's been the Bush, the Clinton, the Bush. Now they want to put Hillary in, and then they want to put Jeb in, and it's ridiculous. We've got to stop it, and the people have to stand up and realize that our country has not gotten better. We have not done better in education. We have not done better in our debt situation. We have not done better in our Social Security. We have not done better in our health care. And all the people of the United States are getting is a story. And unfortunately, I just did a press release about looks and pocketbooks, and I hope that the American people stop voting on looks and pocketbooks and start looking at reality and facts and solutions.
Right. Now, from a realistic point of view, you're not as well known as Hillary Clinton, nor Barack Obama, or several others. How do you intend to get your message out? Obviously, you can be writer's reign, but if no one knows you're there, you're not going to go anywhere. You know that as well as I do. How do you intend to promote your campaign?
Well, I should say this. First of all, I want to thank you for allowing me to be on the show tonight. I'm available at any time. I've been on many radio talk shows, and the word is getting out there slowly, but surely. In addition, I'm looking at the Clinton situation, and She's got a big herd herself, so she needs a, I should say, a little bit of a head start, because personally I think she's going to run out of gas. Barack Obama is a non-entity for me. If you look at his past record, he became a senator because of, I forget the name of the other senator, I think it was Senator Ryan, who dropped out, was in trouble. He's also, he's from Kenya, and I don't believe that he has the backbones or the roots to be able to run this country, and I hope the American people see that. I mean, I believe that the next president of the United States, whether it be me or the next guy or next lady, has to be a very, very knowledgeable international business person, humanitarian person, a religious person who understands the facets of business, religion, and politics. And I also believe that America needs a grassroots, meat and potatoes man who was brought up in the streets, as we all, most of us have been, so that we can bring back to the White House the respect for what the people need. And these politicians, I call them politicians, they're not paying attention to the Americans, and they're not worried about Social Security because they're not on it. And I'm very concerned, and I've got a solution for it. But to answer your question, how I'm going to get out there, first of all, I can tell you that with God, anything's possible, so I never rule anything out. Doors can be opened because of favor in life, and I've certainly had a lot in my end. But I will say that I do have some plans pertaining to media and advertisement. We're in the process of putting those things together. I've also recently stepped up to be the requested to be the front runner of the Reform Party, which is the party that Ross Perot began. And Ross Perot's lawyers are all working with me, and we're organizing now the entire Reform Party, which is ballot access in 8 states and chairpersons in 12 states, and I hope to double the chairpersons quickly. I'm also speaking at the Libertarian event and also requesting the possibility of getting on their ballot. I hope to speak at the Constitution event and also the Green event. So the most important issue for me is to get on the ballot. I believe if I can get on the ballot, I believe I'll get the votes from the American people, and God willing, we'll see.
Okay, let's talk about issues. You mentioned religion, your faith. What is your opinion of the separation of church and state?
Well, I can tell you this. I'm not here to throw stones at anybody or anyone, because the situations that we have in our country have been, borne by several presidencies, not just one. And I'd be a fool to say that I could solve all the issues and problems, especially in four years. I don't think that anyone can do that. But the fact is if you look in our history from our forefathers, there were certain things laid down pertaining to faith, pertaining to the Word of God, pertaining to the religious beliefs in this country, belief in yourself, belief in your family, the family unit, the principles and morals that the foundation of our country was built on. And I have to say that, fact is fact and story is story. If you look at the facts, since we have been breaking down separating the church and state issue, America has been falling. And we do not have the prayer. We do not have the children today having belief and faith in themselves. The family unit's breaking down. The whole moral sense of being in this country and around the world, but more so in this country, has been lost. And I think that the church and the state, whether anybody would like to realize the fact, it's been together. It's always been together. And our forefathers, founded this country on beliefs, and I think that changing those beliefs has shaken and rocking the very foundation of this country like an earthquake. And I think that the guy upstairs is quite upset about it. So I believe in bringing back fundamentals, morals, and principles back to the White House. I believe in prayer in school. I believe in the fact that, okay, if you don't want to believe in God, that's fine. that's your business. But it doesn't cost you anything to believe, but it may cost you something not to believe.
Okay, let me interrupt you there. Our Constitution in itself is a secular document. There is no reference to a deity, regardless of in any way, shape, or form. And I think that was very intentional because it was to be a nation for all people, and that would be people who, I assume, believe in God, people who don't believe in God, and those people who don't know. I mean, feel that maybe there is and maybe there isn't. How do you reconcile your position with a country undivided?
Well, the fact is the Constitution was written like that, and the problems that, you know, have arisen really have come from the people themselves. I think that the foundation of this country and the foundation of prayer and belief in many countries and many religions around the world is something that was instilled in us from when we were born and our parents were born and they were born. But as far as the Constitution is concerned, I believe the Constitution was written, you know, with a clear-cut understanding that, you know, we do have powers to be and we do have some rules and regulations that we should stand by and for, such as mutual respect. And I think that the mutual respect issue on our diplomatic side has been a non-entity. I think that our leadership in the last two leaderships with Bush and Clinton have been a complete disaster. I think what Clinton did in the White House is a complete shame. And for the American people to continue to allow this kind of stuff to go on is only going to worsen our country. And that's why I say I believe in having prayer at home and prayer in the school, and I believe in church. I believe in, you know, the faith. Now, again, everybody has their right to live and believe what they want, but because I've come from a Catholic background, I left home when I was young, without belief, I wouldn't be where I am.
Okay. Now, let's go back to the original question. What is your position of the separation of church and state?
Well, as I said, it's a hot position to take because it should be separate by law, but because of the people and because of the society, I believe that the church plays an integral part of human being and society. And I believe completely ignore it. I do not believe that the religion should play any part in making decisions pertaining to, you know, government offices of government affairs. But I also don't believe that people should be able to take things out of context that, you know, were written in stone years ago and change the morals and principles of what our forefathers put together, which was a deep foundation.
Okay. Would you condone funding, faith-based initiatives funding?
Did you say funding?
Funding, yeah. Monetary, you know, monetary support for faith-based initiatives.
I'll be very clear with you. I have an issue on both ends of the stick here. Number one, no, I'm not against, faith-based initiatives whatsoever. I think they're wonderful. But I am against faith-based initiatives that aren't spending the money properly. One of the things that I have pertaining to the issues pertaining to Social Security has to do with the 501c3 corporations and the difference between legitimate ones and non-legitimate ones. I mean, I give money to the church. I believe in sharing the wealth. I believe in the prayer. And in fact, I'm a spirit-filled man. I'm a Catholic Christian man who's been baptized in the Holy Spirit, and I love God. I mean, I'm on fire for God. But the fact is, there are some pastors and preachers and rabbis that are out there, and imams that are out there collecting money from people and selling them the wrong message. So there should be a fine line on the message, and also after they receive the money. I mean, are they really helping the people? Are they spreading the word? Or are they buying Rolls Royces and Louis Vuitton pocketbooks?
But Dan, who's going to determine that? From a realistic point of view, who's going to determine whether or not a pastor or a religious entity is legitimate or not? I mean, anyone can criticize any religious entity as being illegitimate if they don't, in fact, believe in that in the absolutism of that particular faith.
Well, it's not only religion; it's other sectors. It's 501c3 organizations in general. But to answer that question, I believe that we need much more regulation, and I think that the 501c3 organizations, including church organizations, have to be scrutinized more, because I believe that there's as many good and honorable pastors and rabbis, imams, and preachers of the Word of God that are out there. There is many out there that are crooks, and I think that it's time we put our foot down and we regulate the 501c3 corporations, and we put a cap of contributions on them, and we tighten up the reins. I mean, there's only 7,400,000 nonprofit organizations in this country, and I think enough is enough.
Yeah. Well, I think President Bush has given religion a bad name, in my opinion.
Well, I'll give you my opinion.
Sure.
First of all, I supported Bush only, number one, because I wouldn't have supported Kerry, because I thought there was a serious security breach with Kerry. And why? I can tell you this. The American people need to know that George Bush did not bring al-Qaeda to this country. The al-Qaeda operatives came here on the Clinton clock. Bill Clinton was sleeping behind the wheel and wasn't paying attention and did not protect the people of this country, and nor do I believe his wife will be able to protect us either. So I supported Bush, and I also supported him because he said he was a Christian man. Where I am very disturbed, and I think people will agree with me, is after he got in the second term as a Christian and basically lured the Christians in to vote for him, I believe his ego shot up so high and that he forgot the morals and principles of Christianity. And instead of being a light to the world and creating peace in the Middle East, he's created a worse environment in the Middle East, because he will not stop killing our soldiers and he will not stop spending our money, because he's on what I consider a big ego trip that has been infiltrated by the powers of the devil. And until he realizes that he's being led down the wrong path, which I do believe he is, because he's listened to some of my press releases and things that I've had to say pertaining to Kerbin and the Poppy in Afghanistan, and I've requested ceasefire in Iraq immediately. But anyway, to answer your question, I believe that he has done a great injustice to society pertaining to his claim to fame of being a man of God, and if he's a man of God, then for God's sake, he should act like one.
I know, people not of faith would look at the situation and say, this is what you get when you have a man of faith in the office, and they have something to hold on to when they say that, don't they?
Well, I think you got a both sides of the coin there. I mean, again, there are many, many, preachers, pastors, imams, cardinals. I mean, there are so many religious figures that are good, and there are so many that are bad. I think the problem that, America has, and also the world, it's not just America. I mean, I've spent majority of my life outside the United States, traveling around the globe. But the fact is you really need to look at who is your president. Where did he come from? What trials and tribunes has he gone through? What successes, and I don't mean in the wallet, because I'm not about money. Money doesn't buy anything in life other than
agree.
With foolish people. But what really, really creates a good leader is a person who has a multiple amount of experiences, knowledge, and wisdom because of his bumps and bruises in life. And I've been through the gamut around the globe, and I can tell you, I don't believe any of these candidates, have the experience that I have, and I'm not being prejudiced. I hope that I can debate with them. But if I was to pick a couple, if you'd ask me that question, I can tell you who.
Well, how do you reconcile taking someone's tax dollars, or taking someone's money, hard-earned money, giving it to the government, and then the government reapportioning that money to a particular religious sect that that person does not support or believe in, or support in any way, shape, or form? How do you justify that with a faith-based religion? A faith-based initiative, rather.
Wait, one second. You have to repeat that one, because that's a very good one. You're saying that faith-based organizations who are being directed money to the government?
By the government. You know, the government is funding faith-based initiatives. That's taking money from people's wallets, their earnings, obviously in the form of tax, goes to the government. The government takes that money, albeit a small portion of it, you know. Then it gets reproportioned to religious organizations that they may not agree with whatsoever. I mean, how do you justify that?
Well, first of all, I don't know exactly what you're saying, but what I'm hearing from you is unjustifiable. It's, in my opinion, inappropriate, and it should never happen. And if, in fact, what you're saying is the U.S. government is taking, you know, sides here and recycling and investing in religious organizations for, you know, benefits, and I have to be very sincere with you. I'd really have to look into this one, because if that's what's going on, it's got to be stopped. And the problem again.
Okay. That's all I want, because not that I want to cut, because I thought you were you were promoting that, and I'm saying, well, geez, how does that promote someone's liberty when someone takes money out of my wallet and gives it to a religion that I may totally disagree with, albeit they are a religion which is recognized, but one that I don't believe in, but my money goes to support their particular, which the government is doing now, by the way, Dan. I hate to tell you.
You're talking about church and state in that manner?
Yeah.
Then I'm with you 100,000%. It shouldn't happen. I'm looking at church and state more as more on the moral issue and more on the home issue. But if you're talking about the financial side,
that's right.
It's illegal and it shouldn't be done.
Okay. All right. Now, on to the economy. I noticed on your website you said we must enact policies and measures that spend less, save more, export more, import less, balance our budgets, and address the growing mountain of unfunded liabilities. I guess the last one's probably the biggest one. Within the first 50 days of your administration, should you request funding and the establishment of a special office for Gulf Coast redevelopment to complete the revitalization of the region devastated by Hurricane Katrina. There's an awful lot there. Where would you like to start with that one, under the auspices of the economy? How would you like to tackle that?
Well, first of all, we have a fiduciary responsibility as a country to work on the Katrina victims and Louisiana. But I'm going to give you my point on that. I believe that our president is holding that in the bag. I believe that he's purposely has not worked on solving the issues in Louisiana and Mississippi and Katrina victims. And this is why. I think he's using it for an ace card, and you can mark my words. I hope you tape in this program, because I'd like a copy of it. You can mark my words that sometime toward the middle of 2008, just before the election time, he is going to be, as they would say, white on rice with the Katrina situation, and he's going to use that at the end days so that he can then turn it around for his benefit when he gets out of office. So him and his little buddy Cheney can go out and redevelop the entire area and put all the funds in their pocket. And I'd like to be quick on the answers, but I will say that this also has to do with Iraq and why he dropped the ball in Iraq. He dropped the ball in Iraq. Why? Because he thought that was his big watering hole. But when Katrina hit, they figured out, wow, we've got just as big of a hole right in our backyard. So I think one of the things they're going to do is they're going to utilize Katrina toward the end here. And the second thing they're going to do is they're going to come up with some Mickey Mouse head of Bin Laden somewhere in Afghanistan, which isn't going to be Bin Laden, because they're never going to find Bin Laden, because the deal was made long time ago. The Bin Laden organization invested in the oil business many, many years ago, and they're never going to find him, and they don't want to find him because he may speak a little bit about things that some people don't want to hear. But the fact is that they're going to come up with some Mickey Mouse scandal that they found him or his ruins or his bones or something. And these two issues, I mark my words, these two issues will be the two issues that George Bush will try to utilize to revive the Republican Party. But if the people of the United States give me a chance to speak, which I believe they will find that I am a man of fact and I am a man of solution. So with that, the first thing that I would do is always protect the American people. Number one, ceasefire immediately in Iraq, pull back the troops to the base. I say double the troops. I don't say go to war. I say double the troops. Put our presence in the Middle East, because we're never going to get out of there, because the 22 countries in the Arab League, the majority of them don't want us out of there. And number two, destroy the poppy fields in Afghanistan, completely wipe them out. And number three, we need to go to Maliki, and we need to tell Maliki, look, Mr. Maliki, the people of the United States have had enough. We've lost our children. We spent $400 or $450 billion. If you really care and support what America has done for you, then you need to enact in your Constitution a program to pay America back on an oil program at a concessionary price over the next 10 or 20 years, that we get back all our money. And if you do that, then I can go back and sell it to my people. By the way, my message is getting out there. Our administration is listening to me. I'm not getting the credit for it, but guess what? Maybe someday the people will realize who said it, because it's all in black and white.
Okay. Now, I'd love to ask you about past events, but that's not going to help us much, because we all have 20/20 hindsight. Iran, what do we do? What's your position there?
First of all, Ahmadinejad was a mouse. He's a weak man. He's not a strong man. And he wasn't a bad man. What happened is when he became president of Iran, George Bush called him a killer, an American killer. And 2 weeks later, he said, we made a mistake. It was a lookalike. And he insulted the man. So from the day that he insulted that man, the same way he insulted the Chinese when he tried to push the Chinese to make a decision on the devaluation of their currency, and the Chinese wanted to buy Unical, you can't do that to the Chinese. It doesn't work in their culture. In the Iranian situation, it doesn't work in the Iranian culture to put a man down in front of his people the first day in office, call him a killer, then say it was a mistake, and not even apologize to him.
All right, what would you do with the current situation, the way it is? How would you approach it? We have just made you president, okay, and this situation is before you. What would be your position with Iran?
I get in the first flight and I go eat some Burma with the Ahmadinejad, the president of Iran, and I speak to him in his language.
Okay, all right. In other words, you want to end the saber rattling.
Well, look, the fact of the matter is if the man wants to create nuclear power for electricity for his territory, that's fine. But let's be honest. Israel has had a nuclear weapon for a long time. It's been backed by the United States. The Iranians are sick and tired of it. And the Syrians and Bashar al-Assad, you know, this boy took over from his dad. His dad died, and this boy, he was a dentist. And he took over a regime. He took over a country. And instead of our President George Bush going to Bashar al-Assad, which I called out a year ago, go to the boy and say, look, son, I know your father died. You took over a big job. Let us help you. He had the perfect chance to turn Syria to come with us. And I asked Bashar to reach out. I can tell you, I was supposed to be on a plane tonight to the Middle East. And I didn't go because I have too many things here for the moment. And there's an organization for me to meet with Ahmadinejad and Bashar al-Assad. And the fact is if I went to meet with Ahmadinejad right now, today, and George Bush would open up his ears, you know, he calls on me to come to Washington to meet him for dinner, but he wants me to give him $25,000 to do it.
Right.
The fact of the matter is, if this guy would open up his ears and see that there's a man here that came from nothing in his life, that's traveled the globe better than most, that has an education second to none, and if he only took the time to listen, what Pope John Paul said to this world, who was the greatest man on the face of this earth, in my opinion. He spread mutual respect, and that's where we've lost it.
Yeah, we lost it there. I have to agree with you there. I'll make a deal with you, Dan. If you come visit me, have dinner with me, I'll only charge you $10,000. I'm on the cheap today. I'll make you a deal.
Funny side of that. Last year, I got a letter. I mean, the year Bush got in the second term, I get faxes once a week from the Republican National Convention. You know, I sent them a couple of dollars at the first time, and they nominated me the Republican National Chairman of their honorary committee. And then after, I gave them a few dollars because I wanted to learn their scandal. And then they made me the Republican Businessman of the Year. And then I looked in the newspaper and I saw 100 Republican Businessmen of the Year. Let me tell you something. What a scandal. And you know what's sad? The people of the United States of America fall for it.
I know. We do it all the time. One second. We have to take it just a second just for station identification. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Liberty Talk Radio. My name is Joe Christiano. I'm the host. And on the pipe tonight, we have Mr. Daniel Imperato, who is the independent candidate, Reform Party. Is that Dan?
I'm seeking the nomination of the Reform Party, but I'll tell you what I am doing. I'm trying to combine all the independent parties, Libertarians.
Okay.
I'm trying to find a way to make peace with all so I can get ballot access.
Okay.
So I'm running independent.
All right. I'd like to mention if there's someone out there would like to call in, our number is 646-652-4620. That's 646-652-4620. And I'm sorry, I should have mentioned that about twice before, but I was enthralled in what you were saying, and I forgot to mention that. A word to the wise on this, Dan. If you want to appeal to the Libertarians, you're going to have to be a free trader. You have to be for open immigration. You're going to have to be for freedom to be who you want to be in the United States. And I know a lot of people have difficulty with that because the United States is a country where freedom purportedly is supposed to be supreme. In other words, we have the right to do whatever we want to do that makes us happy, provided it does not affect anybody else adversely. So if you want to marry a woman, you can marry a woman. If you want to marry a man, you can marry a man. Who cares? I mean, it's your business. It's not my business. And that's basically the libertarian view. I can tell you that right now because I am a libertarian and I know how they think.
Well,
what do you think of that?
I agree that, you know, life is free for all. But when you said the word affecting others, there's some things that you keep in the closet, and there's other things that you don't keep in the closet. As far as the Libertarian Party is concerned, you know, there's issues between the Libertarians and the Greens and the Constitutions and the Reforms, and just like there's issues between the Democrats and the Republicans, which basically are one today. But let me tell you what my issue is. I don't want to say care, but I don't recognize any of these parties' wants and desires, because if they were very serious parties, they would find a way to get a third party in the White House. And the way to get a third party in the White House is to understand, number one, nobody's going to make everybody happy because it's not going to happen. Number two, if they band together, they could actually create the biggest change in government in the history of this country by banding together their ballot access, coming to the table as one, and putting a third party in that White House. And I can bet you this, when I get the chance, I'm speaking at the Libertarian Convention, I hope to go to the Green Party, I will be at the Reform Party, I hope to get invited at the Constitution Party, and I'm going to say this to these groups. If you really want change, and you really want to make a statement, then we've got to put down all of the issues and we've got to combine forces to make a change by putting a third party in the White House. When we get in the White House, then we can discuss how we can make everybody happy, how we can make the Greens happy with the environment, and how we can make the Libertarians happy with what everybody wants to do and how we can get the Reform Party happy, like Ross Perot was right. When Ross Perot was in, he said that the debt was going to go up. It was $4.5 trillion. It's now $9 trillion. He said the jobs were going to go overseas. Nobody listened to him. The jobs went overseas. So the fact is if everybody keeps separate, then we're not going to get a third party in the White House. So if they're really serious about what they're speaking about, we want to be an independent. We want to have an independent in the White House. Well, then open up your eyes and realize coming together can do that. And I hope they understand that.
Okay.
Because if they do, now as far as the issues, yeah, we have to work some things out between each other. But what's more important, your issues or putting somebody in the White House to speak as an independent?
Well, at least we have a place to start.
Exactly.
In your position, we have a place to start. I may not agree with what you are saying, but if you are open to consensus and understanding, and at least getting the ball rolling in the right direction rather than the wrong direction, we've made strides. And I will agree with you. I'll agree with you because there's right. No party's going to change everything overnight with one particular person in office.
It's almost like AT&T and deregulation. You know, once you get one independent in, then all the parties open up and get stronger. So get one in and then deregulate.
Right. Okay. Agree. Now, here's an easy topic, one not many people have any problem with, and that's health care. Do you feel that there should be any government involvement in health care?
Well, yes, I do. I do think there should be government involvement, but I can tell you, I'll give you my solution on health care, because I've got what it takes, and this comes back to some of the, you know, there's an old saying, whatever goes around comes around, and you only get what you put in. The fact of the matter is that the government side of health care that really needs to participate in give you my solution. And as far as Hillary Clinton's concerned, mark my words, she told you she was going to give you health care when her husband was president, and she still hasn't done it. She told you that she was going to stay in her term as senator for the duration, and she isn't. And she her word is no good. Her life is all about political maneuvers, and she doesn't deliver the facts.
Right.
So just keep that in mind. I'm going to give you a solution to health care.
Okay.
Let me tell you how easy it would be to solve the health care problem in this country. And God willing, I hope one of these politicians try to steal my thunder, and you'll be my witness.
Okay. I'll sue for you, okay?
No, not sue. You're my witness. Because, you know, I just like to know I'm a straight guy. Let me tell you, if we took the FDA, who charges, after all said and done, a drug goes on the market, it costs about $800 million. So guess what? Under the Imperato for President 2008 plan, it now costs $900 million. I want to put a $100 million surcharge tax on every FDA-approved drug, and that $100 million goes into the health care fund. And that health care fund is regulated both by public and by government people as a private government corporation. And I believe that if you have 50 to 100 drugs a year being approved, then guess what? Just add up the numbers. Now, if these drug companies don't want to participate in what I have to say, then guess what? Soon there's going to be no money to buy their drugs. So they better find a way to replenish the system. Secondly, any drug that's manufactured by a U.S. patent, whether in the United States or outside the world, there's a 3% hidden tax on every drug manufactured and distributed, every pill. That 3% goes into the health care fund. Guess why? If you don't replenish the well and you continue to put drugs on the marketplace and they keep outpricing, and there's more drugs on the consumer marketplace than there are illegal drugs. There's more drugs on the consumer marketplace that are illegal. It has to stop. And the fact is maybe if these FDA approvals were a little bit more stringent and there was a higher cost and part of it went to the healthcare First of all, we'd have a system that would never die. Second of all, maybe we wouldn't have as many drugs on the counters that we have, because America, you know what we're known around the world? You know what we're known? We're known to be the druggies of the world. And the fact of the matter is we have been loaded with drugs. And the fact is if they're going to continue to load America and Americans are going to continue to take these drugs, then guess what? When America can't pay for it anymore because they have no Social Security and they have no health care, the drug companies are going to be out of business. So if they start now and they share a little bit and they put a $100 million surcharge on every FDA-approved drug and a 3% hidden tax on every pill made, guess what? We won't have this discussion about health care. And then the health care will be three things. It'll be for the people who can't afford it. It'll be provided, co-provided with corporations. It'll be co-provided with individuals. And the people who are wealthy enough to be able to, you know, pay for their health care and go to whatever doctor they want to go to, so be it. But there has to be a managed care and co-pay system. And if we raise enough money through the tax that I'm talking about and the surcharge that I'm talking about, then it maybe be free. But the fact is, and I'm telling you, mark my words, if you don't, look, it's like putting gas in your car. Eventually you run out. And what's happening? Our Social Security's dying. Our healthcare system, people don't have healthcare. They can't buy the drugs. So wouldn't it be smart to take, you know, some of these big drug companies, their CEOs are making $50 million a year, $100 million a year. It's ridiculous. I say you got to put back into the system. I say surcharge and tax and put back into the healthcare system. And I can tell you about Social Security if you want.
Should we privatize Social Security?
Well, big question. First of all, if privatizing Social Security was such a big deal, I mean such a great big deal, then the way they're claiming that it would be a great big deal is because people would buy stocks. Well, let me tell you something. I don't know any average American, including myself, that has made a tremendous amount of money buying and selling stocks. Now, yeah, there are people who have made money sitting over 20 years, 30 years, 10 years. There are people who day trade, but the average Johnny come lately in the stock market is the worst disaster. They buy high and they get killed. So unless you bring in a system, which I have, an educational system, which I'm not going to get into because it's proprietary, it's called the U.S. education system, but we'll get into that after. No, I do not believe privatizing Social Security is the right way to fix Social Security. Let me tell you how I would fix it.
Okay.
Mark my words, remember this show. If you took three guys in this country, I'll call them out, and I'll call them right in front of me. I'll call Bill Gates, I'll call Warren Buffett, and I'll call Hank Greenberg. Three guys who just donated some, I believe, $25 billion each over the next period of so long into foundations that they control to divert their tax so that they can take this foundational money and they can go invest it in Africa and India and Indonesia and tsunami and Sri Lanka. But what about America? So you know what I say? I say, number one, 501c3 corporations, cap them, regulate them, the ones that are no good, close them.
Okay.
The ones that are doing, that are okay, regulate them, make sure the money's spent properly, cap the contribution. The major nonprofit organizations like Cancer Society, American Lung Society, regulate them, like the SEC regulates companies, make the directors responsible for the people's money, and make sure that money is spent properly. And I say cap the contribution. You know what I say? I say the only way to turn Social Security around in this country is, number one, and I'll get back to this, but the cap, 501c3 cap contributions, the money has to be directed. There's no more Bill Clinton raising, you know, tens of millions of dollars and going to Africa for AIDS. We got AIDS right here in America. Let's spending the money in American laboratories and factories, and let's get a way to solve the AIDS problem, but in America.
Okay. You brought up the subject foreign aid. Foreign aid. What's your position on foreign aid?
Well, no. Well, let me finish Social Security, and then I'll tell you
okay.
Foreign aid. Foreign aid needs a whole restructuring, because guess what? I'll be quick on this one. Half of the countries we give foreign aid to, because of the increase of oil, minerals, and strategic metals, are now more wealthy than we are. So they should be giving us money back. As far as I'm concerned, America's got to stop writing checks. George Bush just approved $400 million to forgive, not Togo, one of the African countries where the woman just became president, Benin. Okay, why should we give $400 million to Benin? The fact of the matter is, in Benin, they have diamonds and gold. They steal $400 million a month out of that country.
That's correct.
Yeah, we're giving them $400 million. It's a joke. Let them pay their own bill. But get back to Social Security. Social Security is an easy solution. If the only, and listen to what I'm saying to you, if every American realized that tax contribution dollars, if a guy like me makes whatever, $1 million, and I'm going to have $250,000 tax liability, so I want to go give $200,000 away to a foundation so that the guy I give it to can go drive a Rolls Royce and his wife can have a Louis Vuitton bag. No. Okay, no. You know what I say? The only unlimited 501c organization in America is called the 501c3 Social Security Fund.
Okay.
And if you want to give your money to a nonprofit organization,
give it to Social Security.
People, give it back
okay.
to people, build the Social Security Fund, and reinvest in the people that allowed you to make the money. Bill Gates, he should cop off $10 billion and put it in the Social Security Fund. The same like Warren Buffett. The same like Hank Greenberg. There's $30 billion right there in contribution
Well, what do you think about the government when Social Security money comes in? It's not proportioned to Social Security. It's spent, and it's Social Security benefits are paid out of current revenues. So
right,
it goes into a general fund.
It's the same way with the pension funds for U.S. Airlines, U.S. Airways, and United. They've been scammed. The
right.
fact is the Social Security fund that I have, the unlimited... unlimited 501 Social Security, 501c3, where all the multimillionaires and billionaires can write biggest checks they want into this, has to be regulated, and the board of directors has to be equal between public and government people. So when you ask me, should government be involved in Social Security? Yes. Should Social Security be privatized? Yes and yes. In other words, privatize it, regulate it, keep the government on one side, keep the people on the other, keep the checks and balances, and if people want to make contributions to a nonprofit organization, they should make it to my 501c3 corporation instead of giving it to guys like Bill Clinton so he can go run to Africa and bring all his money there.
Yeah.
And they can go to Bill Gates and they can say, Bill Gates, I'm going to go to India and open up schools. Let me tell you, I know the Indians well, God bless them. I know Rathead and Tata well. I know the Mehta family well. I know the Lockheed family well. They got more money than we have. So it's about time we put money back in our own system. That's
okay.
what I'm trying to say. Both Social Security, both health care.
I'm going to change the subject a little bit, a subject that I did a little program on last week, and that is the separation. No, it wasn't the separation, but it was about public schooling, which I will call government schooling. What is your solution or what are your suggestions regarding one of the industrial world's worst secondary school systems? And it happens to be in the United States.
Oh, boy. So you want my third vehicle, huh? You really
want to
get
me. do you want to take a break to take a high blood pressure pill or something?
Pulling all my issues out of me, then I'm getting ready to blast all over the country anyway.
Okay, well, we're going to be the first to hear it. I'm proud of that.
Listen, education is disgusting. Our country is absolutely disgusting. We ought to be ashamed of ourselves. We take foreign people come into this country and pay tuition to go to Harvard and Yale and Brown and all these big schools. And if you're an American and you live in California but you want to go to Yale, it costs an American more for their tuition than it does a foreigner. Why? Because of the special interest group inside the universities that are collecting contributions from foreign governments and people to bring their children here to school. And guess what? After they go to school, they take all our brains and they leave. Second thing is, the school system and the university side is who let all the terrorists in this country. You talk about immigration. You're worried about a couple of Mexicans coming over the border that are, you know, majority of them, they wouldn't hurt a fly. They're nice Guatemalan people and Mexican people. They're sweet as can be.
I know that. Yeah, I know many of them. Yeah, they're wonderful people. Wonderful, hardworking, and they're family-oriented. And they're afraid. I mean, they're very much afraid of most Americans, by the way. And, you know, and I really feel sorry for them.
Without doubt, so do I. And we can talk about that. But the fact is that the terrorists came in this country through the airports, through immigration, through security. I want to ask one thing about, and then I'll get into the U.S. education system. What happened to the terrorists that took down 9/11, took down the other aircraft? Did anybody ever ask the question, how did they get here, and who stamped out on the first day they stepped into the United States? How did they get here, and who stamped out? We've never heard that. I want to know that question. I want that answer.
Let me ask you a question. This is going to be an off-the-wall question. I never intended to ask you this question, but it just sparked in my head. So allow.
School first?
Excuse me?
You want me to answer education first?
Oh, yeah. Why don't you? Yeah. If we're running out of time. We only have about 2 or 3 more minutes, okay?
Education is easy. I got an online education company called the U.S. Education System. I have a course donated from every university in the country, and guess what? I have an online education system free to all. Forget one lot, don't leave a child behind. I won't leave anybody behind. Go ahead.
Well, I had a couple of gentlemen, in fact, visit my studio a few months ago. They were from an organization called the 9/11 Truth Movement. They feel that we do not know the real answers behind 9/11. They feel that the government is hiding.
So we don't have time. I know where you're going with that.
I mean, what is just your general... Yeah, we only have a minute, but if I just wanted to get your take on it, just out of curiosity.
Let me tell you the areas of... I do not agree with the fact that the government have purposely planned this act. I think that is a little bit outrageous. But I will say this. I think that there was a lot of mess up in the system. I think that Bill Clinton has a lot to answer. He's the one that should be answering these questions. He was the president. How did the terrorists get in this country? Why didn't he do anything about it when Lockman bombed the towers first? Why did they let these people come in here? How did they get in this country? And by the way, they get in this country, I can tell you how I feel. There was a relationship between the Bin Laden family and the contracting family in the Middle East and many U.S. contractors and oil companies long before the sun of the tribe of Bin Laden, who left the Bin Laden tribe. I know the family. I know them well. The fact of the matter is they bought their way in this country. And a lot of these terrorists came in from Saudi Arabia, and Saudi Arabia bought our country, too. Bought our country, and I don't want to get into how, but someday we can. The fact of the matter is that the terrorists came into this country, and nobody has put no one has put a microscope on how. So, yes, I do believe 9/11... There's a lot to be discussed.
Okay.
I believe Bill Clinton's where we should start, and I believe that George Bush has some answers too. But remember, George Bush inherited 9/11. He did not make it happen.
Okay. Dan, I'd like to thank you so much for being on our program. You gave us a lot of insight into your campaign, but more so a different twist on and different solutions to some of our major problems. When I hear, I'll probably get some email. I may forward them to you. I may even give you a call. If you don't mind, I'll call one of your campaign managers, and we'll resolve those issues from there, and maybe we can banter back and forth in the future.
On the show, if you want to get some questions and hold another time on your show where I answer them all, anything you could do to help me, I want to help build your show. And if you can get my word out there, I can tell you you're doing the right thing for the American people. God bless you, your family.
Thank you, Dan.
People, and have a great evening and be safe.
Okay, thank you so much, Dan, and good luck to you.
Thank you.
Good night.
Thank you, good night.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was Dan Imperato. He is the independent candidate for president. He's from Florida. He gave us insight on several of the issues facing America today. Many of those issues, for you libertarians, probably you didn't agree with. And because of his heavy alliance on, or more alliance than a libertarian would like, on some of the issues, with the government involvement, rather. But very interesting, and he may have some real good solutions there, you know. So, let's do this. This is the end of our program. And we'll play our little bumper song here, and we'll conclude this broadcast. This is the end of tonight's broadcast. We'd like to thank Ranch Acres Audiology for their financial support, and we'd like to thank you for listening in. You can further the cause of liberty by recommending this program to your friends. And let us hear from you. Our email address is comments@libertytalkradio.com. Again, that's comments@libertytalkradio.com. Or you can phone in your questions to area code 903-551-2186. Remember, you are either allowing your liberties to be taken away or you're striving to protect them. Unfortunately, there is no middle ground. Until next time, stay well, stay tuned.